Radio Australia, on air and online at radioaustralia.net.au.
Now to a feature film made in the Marshall Islands, in the Marshallese language, that has been selected as the opening night film for the Moondance International Festival in New York City. The name of the film, and now I apologise to our listeners on 98.5 FM in Majuro for my pronunciation, the name of the film is called Ainikien Jijit Ilobon, or The Sound of Crickets at Night. Let's have a small taste.
Look at that dude. I mean, look at him. He could be a serial killer for all we know. You know what? I'm gonna hide the knives. Drift away.
Beautiful music happening there. That's a snippet from the trailer of a new film out from the Marshall Islands, The Sounds of Cricket at Night. And joining us is one of the filmmakers, Jack Needenthal. Jack, welcome to Radio Australia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations on this news. It must be pretty exciting to have your film selected for this prestigious event.
Yes, we're really happy. It's such an unusual thing for us. Most of our films that we've done in the past have shown around in the Pacific area here. So for having one of our works of art go all the way to New York City, it's really exhilarating.
First of all, how do I pronounce the name of the film in Marshallese?
It's Ainikien Jijit Ilobon.
That's almost what I said?
Yes, it is. You were very close. Good for you.
So before we hear about more of the film, tell us a bit about the festival and the award that you've won, the Moondance Atlantis Award for Foreign Feature Films.
Well, yes, that's an award for feature films done in a foreign language. The Moondance Film Festival is in New York City. There were only three feature films, I believe, chosen for any kind of award, so ours was one, so we're pretty happy about that. And it starts on September 14th and goes through September 16th. Actually, it starts on September 13th, I'm sorry. And New York City, it's in the Tribeca Film Theaters, which is some theaters that are also used by Robert De Niro's Tribeca Film Festival. So it's a really nice set of theaters. So we're very excited about that.
And possibly some nice people to meet within the industry and to expand your networks there.
Well, it is New York City, and when I have been to many film festivals in the past for various reasons, and the one thing I really do enjoy about them is going there and meeting all these fabulous people from the industry, because those are the people you really learn a lot from.
What kind of response do to industry people that you meet rather than judges think about the film?
Well, I haven't really met any yet. This is like our initial film festival, really. It's the first one it's gone to, so I haven't really had any reaction from them. The only reactions we have so far from our film are the people who have been reviewing it with me and working on it. But I know the woman who is the executive director of Moondance really liked the film. I mean, we had a very long phone call conversation at one point, and she made a lot of suggestions about the film that I thought were really good. And it was just a really wonderful conversation I had with her. Her name is Elizabeth English. She was just really helpful to our film and what it has become at this point, because I use a lot of her insights to do some editing on the film.
So to the film now, and I'll try to say it again, Ainikien Jijit Ilobon, translating in English as The Sound of Crickets at Night. So you said it's produced and directed by yourself and Susan Chittaror. You wrote the screenplay. Can you let us know what it's about?
Well, this film centers on a little girl. She's 10 years old. She's a Bikinian Islander. I've worked with the Bikinians all my life, so I know their stories very well. And she's basically watching as her family disintegrates because her mother and father, for a variety of reasons, argue a lot. They decide to separate, and they leave the island, and they take her younger sister with her. The father goes in one direction, the mother goes in the other with the little girl, and they leave her behind to take care of her old elderly grandfather. And he's not telling anybody, but he's having a problem with a very serious illness. He knows he's dying, but he's been left to take care of this little girl. And he tries everything he can to keep her happy, but she deteriorates fairly quickly. She misses her mother and her sister, and she stops working, and she stops playing with her friends, and she's always moping around the house and very sad. So he decides he's going to try to get loans from a bank and try to get some money somehow to get it so she can go visit them in Arkansas, maybe even stay with them, but he can't get any money. So in the end, what he has to do is he has to call upon an ancient Bikinian deity from Bikini Atoll to help her with the situation. And so he uses this medicine on her, and the deity arrives, I'll just say, in a very strange form, and begins to help this little girl, no one understanding that this is the deity that he had summoned forth. So it's not the Bikinian story. I like to say it's a Bikinian story. You don't see a lot of diatribes about the U.S. government and what happened to them. It's just a situation of a Bikinian family trying to cope with their daily lives. So it's a real nice insight into how people live their lives here and how some of these family problems are dealt with here in the islands. It's all in Marshallese, and it's just a really, to me, you know, I wrote the story, but it's really an enchanting story.
Well, even though you said it's not the Bikinian story, it's still a very serious topic, like what's sort of happened since the nuclear testing. And of some of the descriptions given of the film, it's a meditation on loss and emotional deprivation, and the first attempt to articulate on the screen the pain the Marshallese have endured for generations and continue to endure into the 21st century. What do you think about those descriptions?
Well, I think they're very accurate, and that's something a lot of people don't see. You don't see people sitting around moaning, complaining about what happened. You see them trying to struggle with their lives as they are now. They've been handed a situation. It's now over 60 years old. And I like to depict just how people are dealing with their daily lives today. And I think that's what the reviewer picked up on. It's a very, and it's this little 10-year-old girl, and she's trying to cope with this. And then you have this old man who's her grandfather named Jabuki, and he's longing to go back to Bikini. He knows what Bikini's like, whereas for the little girl who's 10, Bikini is just a myth. It's something she's always heard about, but she's never seen it or been there. So this old man is trying desperately. He's asking to go back there to die, and he just really longs to go back to see that great land that he once lived on, but he can't because, of course, it's irradiated.
Of course, that theme of connection to the homeland.
Yeah, and you have to understand something about Marshallese people. I mean, everybody who's Marshallese is connected to a piece of land. It's what they can describe as their gift from God, so it's an extremely important concept that a lot of Westerners never really latch on to. And the idea that these people, their ancient homeland, has been basically off limits for 65 years, that, you know, they can't be buried where their ancestors are. They can't grow up on the land that actually belongs to them. They're always living on somebody else's land. It's a really hard concept for the Bikinians to deal with, and I try to bring that out in the film.
The issue has been around for a while. Why did you decide that now is the time to make the film?
Well, you know, I picked up a camera for the first time when I was 50 years old. I had always had a great interest in movies. I traveled with film festivals, to film festivals before with Radio Bikini, and I became enamored with making films and writing stories. And I began this journey because my son, one day we were in a video store, and he looked around and he said, "Dad, you know, how come there are no Marshallese movies in the Marshallese language?" And that really struck hard when he said that. And I felt that we have to change this. I mean, that's the kind of person I am. I just said, well, if that's the way it is, we can change it. And so I began writing that first story, and I wrote these first three stories. It's a very loosely based trilogy where I used some of the core actors in all the films, and I was really learning how to make a film at that point. I know the Marshallese out here really loved it. We've sold 2,500 DVDs for each of these films. We have couple thousand people watch them each time we air them in the theaters here. And so I really wanted to learn how to make a good film before I tried to put the Bikinian story on film, because that story is near and dear to me. I've worked for these people, you know, for almost 30 years. My wife's a Bikinian. I have 5 kids and a grandson. I really wanted to do the story justice, so I held off. I mean, we have a whole new camera this time. It's a really nice high-definition camera. It had great sound. So I had everything the way I wanted it, and that's why I decided, well, I'm going to go ahead and do this Bikini film now.
It's an emotional topic, and as you said, one that's quite close to your own heart. How was the experience in making the film?
It was really intense because you have to understand, almost all the actors in this film are Bikinians. I mean, they're telling this story of their own in a fictional way. You know, it's a fictional film, but we go to Bikini, we film, you know, there's actual shots of this reef where the reef god actually lives, where they believe he lives, and this was basically their god before Jesus, Christianity came into their lives. So this is a really important piece of their history. We do their creation myth within the film. So, and working with these little Bikinian kids, I know they learned a lot from just this whole process. And we just don't have Bikinians in there. We have other elements. There's actually an Australian woman named Karen Earnshaw who adds a little levity to the film. I can't make a film unless there's some humor in it. So even though this is a very intense story, I have a lot of humor in the film to kind of entertain people as we go along. So, you know, the whole experience, we tried when I wrote the story, I wanted to have a really big mass appeal for a lot of different kinds of people. I just didn't want it to focus on just the Marshallese. I wanted everybody to have a character in the film to identify with, so it would maybe help them understand the story and relate to the story more. So I created this whole menagerie of people in this film to help move the story along. But it was really a lot of fun to do. The little girl was just fabulous to work with. She's a real character. And it was just a lot of fun. Suzanne Jutara, who co-produced this film with me, you know, when I write these stories, it's kind of funny because I write these stories, I don't think about how hard is this scene going to be to do. But Suzanne, when we do these films, she has this way of saying, you know, what were you thinking when you wrote this? Because it was so hard to make, you know, when we were making the film. And she said that probably more in this film than in any of our other ones. I wrote some pretty complicated scenes. Because we're filming on this tiny little island where the Bikinians live now. So it was a lot of fun to make, though.
Well, something else that's quite standout in the film is the music. It's a beautiful flow and really ties into it. Tell me about that.
I have worked with these same. It's just a group of kids. They're high school kids. And this is actually their fourth movie that they've been singing for. And I go to them at the, you know, during the filming of the movie, and some of them are even characters in the movie. The girl who sings the lead is a Bikinian girl. She's actually the granddaughter of a former president of the Marshall Islands, case I note. And I go to them and I say, look, here's the story. Can you write a song that can go with this movie? And they do these songs in both English and Marshallese, and their voices are fabulous. When I record these songs, it's like sometimes I forget to push the stop button because they're so enchanting, their voices. And it's almost become a trademark in our film. Everybody says, oh, we love the music. And to tell you the truth, when you're editing a film and you have to go through the same film over and over and over again, it really helps to have nice music as part of the film. It really helps me when I edit. And I just think these kids are just fabulous. It's Nayla DeBroom wrote all these songs, most of them, and Lulani Ritug is the girl who sings on it, and Jorkam Bungatuk, and, you know, they're just really, and also Joseph Kutchung, these four guys, these four people, they've really been marvelous with the music in all of our films.
Have you had a chance to show it to any of the Marshallese yet?
Well, the way we do, when I create a film here, the way we typically do it is Suzanne Jutara and I watch the film first over and over again and try to hone it down and edit it to a point where we like it. And then the next step is we, you know, show it to our immediate family members. And, you know, my younger son's Max is always a big critic of my films, and he says what he likes and doesn't like. But the big day is coming on September 7th for us, and that's opening night of the film here. Where each one of our films, it's been the same way. We have a showing for all the cast and crew, and then there's just a crush of people usually waiting outside the door wanting to come in and see our film. I mean, the first night last year for our film, Lung and Will's Gift, we had 1,000 people show up the first night, which is a lot.
That's a huge amount. That's a very quite a large amount just to show up to the one night of the film.
Yeah, and it was packed in every single seat in the theater. You have kids sitting in. We have to actually create our own theater here. It's actually in at the Marshall Islands Resort in their meet conference room. But we put 250 chairs in there, and it's just packed. And I'm telling you, there's no greater feeling in the world as an artist when you create a story and then put it on film and then watch people watch your film and react to it and laugh and cry and, you know, have all their various emotional reactions to it. It's really a marvelous experience. I know both Suzanne Jutaro and I really enjoy that part of the whole process.
Well, how do you think they'll react emotionally?
This is a different film from the first three. The first three films I had, I did have comedy and tragedy in the film, just like I do in this one. But this is one that's it cuts a little deeper to the bone because it's about people with financial problems and a family breaking up and the nuclear issue. I mean, these are some really heavy sort of dramatic issues for families in the Marshall Islands. There's a lot of people who are connected to families of nuclear victims here, and a lot of families break up just like anywhere, but here I think it's a little more emotional because everybody watches and everybody sees it and everybody talks about it. I mean, part of this story is this little girl dealing with her friends who make fun of her because her parents have left her with this old man, and she, you know, really has a hard time with that. So I'm anxious to see how they react to this film. It is different. It's not the sort of happy-go-lucky films that we kind of created in the first three. This is a different film.
And what about international audiences? What do you want them to take from the experience?
Well, what I want them to see, I think, you know, there's this amazing bikini story that's out there. And one of the most dramatic stories, you know, you can say in the Pacific or even in the world, these people who have been removed from their homeland and they've been gone for 65 years because of the nuclear weapons. I want people to see how these people live now. I mean, the Bikinians do have trust funds, and they do have monies. They have gotten money for reparations, but they live in most of them live in plywood houses, and most of them are sometimes living hand to mouth and from day to day. They have a very tough life out here. It's a life that people in the U.S. don't understand. I mean, we don't print money out here in the Marshall Islands in the third world. You know, we have to abide by whatever the economy of the world is doing, and sometimes it makes for a very difficult life. Our trust funds have lost a lot of value because of the stock market crashes, and they see the banks and the car companies in the U.S. getting big bailouts, and they keep saying, well, where's our bailout? We lost some money from our trust fund, and so their lives have become very difficult here as a result of the economic problems throughout the world. And I just sort of want people to see this is how these people live, and this is how Bikinians deal with their problems these days. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world being a victim like that.
Well, I hope that you can get that message out across to all of your audiences with The Crickets at Night. Thanks very much for joining us, Jack.
Thank you.
Join the conversation at radioaustralia.net.au.